This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And Seth came out with some comments a couple days ago that were a little bit uncomfortable, for, I think, for everybody here. Was that something that accelerated this deal a little bit, or was it, did you feel that maybe we should do this a little bit quicker?
I think, first of all, the deadline, you know, deadlines for action, and so we were approaching one of those. But, I would assume, and, you know, I felt a little bit more urgency, I would say, once that became public. You don't want to let that linger and you know, become too much of a discussion point, even though it did to some extent. And so, I would be lying if I said that it didn't push things along a little quicker.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Molly out today. That was the voice of Kyle Davidson talking to Tony Granato over the weekend on the Chicago Sports Network about the Seth Jones trade to the Florida Panthers. The Hawks get Spencer Knight and a first-round draft pick in return. And we'll talk about that trade now as we go out to the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Frank Saravalli is from the Daily Faceoff and the insider for the CHSN. Frank, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. How you doing, David?
Doing well. Big trade, big news. And I think, as we heard from Kyle Davidson, he felt an urgency to move Seth Jones. It sounds like it was complicated, though, by the fact that Seth Jones only gave him two teams to whom he would approve a trade to because of his no-movement clause: the Dallas Stars, his hometown team, and the Florida Panthers down in obviously Miami and Fort Lauderdale. They get the guy. What does it mean to the Hawks, who won the deal?
Actually, I hate saying this because it sounds like I'm a fence sitter, but I truly believe this is one of those deals that's a win-win. The Florida Panthers, the defending champs, they get to remake their defense core. They're going to get a rejuvenated Seth Jones, who's not just thrilled to be there. That was his preferred destination. But the Hawks get their goalie of the future. Now, when you consider the rebuild and the master plan, the blueprint that Kyle Davidson has put together for the Hawks, they're overflowing with defensemen. It's looking real promising there. They've got their franchise center in Connor Bedard. They've got all sorts of interesting bottom six forward players in their arsenal. The one thing missing, the one box that needed to be checked, was goaltender. And Spencer Knight is a pedigreed, intriguing fit. Most goalies, David, when they get to the NHL and actually become a starter, are 25 years old. Seth Jones has been in the NHL, Spencer Knight has been in the NHL for a few years already, and he's still just 23. So he's a former first-round pick, 13th overall, and he's someone that, if you look at Florida's roster, they had very few pieces that they wanted to move as trade chips. Knight was one of them, and you really kind of had to squint to view it, and the Hawks were able to kind of dig in there and land Spencer Knight.
I tend to agree with that, because if the Panthers end up winning the East or going back to and winning the Stanley Cup, they're not going to mind trading a backup goaltender who was valued but not necessarily essential. And if Seth Jones has something...
was also picked by a different regime, by the way.
That helps too, right? Yeah.
Yep.
That's a big factor. How much did the Hawks have to bend, do you think? And what did you think of the fact that 25% of Seth Jones' salary will be retained by the team through 2030? Was that a good concession? Obviously, it was necessary.
It was definitely necessary, and I would argue that for Hawks fans, don't spend a second thinking about it. The retention is immaterial for the most part. The NHL and NHLPA already announced and agreed to salary cap numbers for the next three seasons. And two seasons from now, that $2.5 million hit that the Hawks are going to have to retain will be worth less than 2% of the overall cap. So it doesn't really matter. The Hawks also have so much money to spend over the next few years just to get to the salary cap floor. Like, they're going to have to be aggressive just by nature of the cap to bring in new bodies and pieces, which we knew they would be anyway as part of their build, but it's lining up perfectly in terms of having the ultimate blank slate and freedom to do it. So it makes sense to retain in order to facilitate the deal. The Panthers couldn't take on 9.5, but they could take 7. And it also fits, I think, in terms of commensurate with Jones's play. So wouldn't be concerned if you're a Hawks fan about the cap hit. And moving forward, you know, I think the bigger thing, aside from Spencer Knight, we didn't even talk about the first round pick that they get back. I think that's hugely critical in terms of how they can be aggressive in a different way now when it comes to how they build this team.
We're talking with Frank Saravelli from the Daily Faceoff and CHSN about the Blackhawks trade over the weekend here on The Score. So you mentioned that, and you're right about the draft capital, but I don't think it has to be necessarily interpreted as they're going to use that draft pick. They could use it in a trade. They could use it to supplement the roster with a veteran, because I think, Frank, and I'm curious what you how you view this, they've gotten all the draft picks they almost can get now. And I think last summer when they went the free agent route and they went after veterans to maybe be better around Connor Bedard, they were disappointed. This season has not gone as they had planned. So are they looking at those draft picks they now have accumulated as guys – or they can get guys who are going to be young and develop them? Or are those pieces that they can use as trades to get veterans in here who will make a difference?
Well, I think trade is one option. But the other one that I hinted at briefly on CHSN on Saturday night was they could now be really aggressive with an offer sheet if they wanted to target one of those younger RFAs that we saw for really the first time in a while, two players move from the Edmonton Oilers last summer on offer sheets. And it's not a tool that has been widely used in the NHL, mostly for fear of retribution. Hey, you come after our RFA this summer, we're going to go after your younger free agent the following summer. And so that hasn't happened often, but I think the gloves are off now because owners are now looking at this as a realistic avenue or way to procure young talent. And I've said for a while now that this upcoming summer is going to be the summer of offer sheets. Now, the way it works in the NHL is you can only make an offer sheet and produce one for a player that you have the compensatory number of picks for. So if you're going after a super high-end player, you're talking about three first round picks. So you have to have your own first round pick for three consecutive drafts in order to even get a player to sign a deal of that magnitude. The fun part about that from the Hawks perspective is not only do they have all of their own first round picks, but they now have backup secondary first round picks in those draft years that they could, if you want, go spend your own. They'd be hugely expensive given where the Hawks have been in the standings. Super valuable, but that's maybe what makes a team think twice and not match the compensation, and you get the player because you could do that now. If you're the Hawks, you've got extra picks to then still draft players in those rounds and keep the future pipeline flowing. So I think it's a totally different way that you can view the Hawks and their arsenal now. This is one more, you know, added piece of or amount of jet fuel that you can add to this build.
They've had 8 first-round picks over the last 3 seasons. They've got 2 more this year, as you point out, 2 more next year as well. At what point do you have to start showing some evidence of this rebuilding project? And is that what you're maybe alluding to, is that they're trying to maybe use these draft picks to get older, to get better, and to start seeing a bigger difference in the standings next year? Because not that patience is running out on Kyle Davidson. I think the organization is loving what he is doing because he was never been, he's anything but transparent in saying this is exactly what we're going to do. But I'm just curious how you think this is going, and at what point do you start to have to see results?
I think they no doubt wanted to see different results this year. It wasn't, hey, we're going to be challenging for a playoff spot, but I think they wanted to see meaningful progress. That hasn't happened. And the only good part about that is that for the most part, the players that were added, the vets in free agency last summer, were stopgaps. No offense to them. Some of them are just warm bodies that are here on 1 or 2 year deals that are just looking for opportunity. So the good part is no harm in that sense. They're not long-term fixtures, and you've got the ability to easily move on from them. On the other hand, you mentioned and you used the word evidence, and I think evidence is such a key word here because I see evidence. You just don't see it at the NHL level. I watch Sam Brinzell playing for Minnesota. I see Artem Levchunov and his development in Rockford. Everyone can see now Frank Nazar and some of the things that he's beginning to put together in his game. The pieces are there, but you got to search for the evidence. It's not readily right in front of your face. And if you're comfortable with that, if you're Danny Wirtz, if you're Jamie Faulkner, if you're running the Chicago Blackhawks, you're looking at this going, okay, I can see it. Now it's a process of graduating those players to the NHL, which just takes time. And how can we properly supplement them? It's funny because everyone talks, David, about, hey, the Hawks need to go out and get difference makers. And I'm going, what are we going to McDonald's and going through the drive-thru and ordering them like they're chicken nuggets? That's not how it works. You can't do that. So they've got to work through this. Difference makers, just like the NBA, they're hard to find in the NHL. They're harder to acquire, certainly than the NBA. So you can want to, and you can plan, and you can plot, but it's going to take also, in addition to some thinking, some good fortune in order to pull that off.
So the Hawks scored 6 goals the other night in a victory after this trade was made. Very interesting out in Anaheim to see that happen and sort of an offensive explosion by their standards. And yet Connor Bedard did not have a point, did not have a goal or an assist. And you wonder if he's going through another one of those slumps that he didn't really experience last year very much. I know it's year two and he's on the way to making all kinds of history as a teenager, but I think he would be the first to tell you maybe he expected more this year. How does this trade, how does this season finish so you end it in a way that the arrow is pointing up for Connor Bedard? It's always going to be pointing up, Frank, but you know what I mean, that he can finish with a little bit of momentum.
I think just increased production. It's going to be hard to come by, but sometimes at this time of year, too, when you know the teams are way out of it and you've got playoff teams that are really gearing up for a long run, you can catch some teams sleeping. So what would be a reasonable measure of success for Bedard in year two, as this has been a grind? It has been tough. He's now gone through a coaching change. He added a letter to his sweater for Saturday's game in Anaheim with the A for alternate captain. That should be the goal over these last 22 games. Top last year's number. In goals, he's 6 away. In points, he's 12 away. You know, increase, even if it's just on paper, find a way to stack last year, this year on top of last year. Win more faceoffs down the stretch. Little facets of his game, things that he had talked about that he wanted to be better in. It hasn't been perfect. It has not gone smoothly or swimmingly at times. And I think there's been lots of question. Hey, watch Macklin Celebrini in San Jose, the next number one overall pick. Look how different that team's below the Hawks in the standings. Look how different the vibes are there. When you mentioned scored 6 in Anaheim, by the way, that Anaheim team had been playing really well of late, and they were challenging for a playoff spot. It's not a surprise to me because I think the vibes have not been good in this Blackhawk room.
Right.
And you watch San Jose, a team below them in the standings, they've looked like they've had a blast all season long and fun. And I'd like to see the Hawks get back to that. I don't know how they do it. I don't know if it means moving on from some more veteran or grumpy players, if there are any that are playing out this string this season. But that should be an A number one priority for Anders Sorensen and his group, is get everyone feeling good again. And I think Bedard could certainly use some of that as well.
Last thing before I let you go, Frank, really appreciate your time this morning. Friday is the trade deadline. Ryan Donato scored 2 goals on Saturday night. He's having a really good year with 20 goals. I wonder, will the Hawks move him? And in light of this trade, now that they have a goaltender of the future, is Peter Mrazek on the block?
Okay, so two great questions. I've got my latest trade targets board coming out on dailyfaceoff.com today. Ryan Donato is number 13 of 45, and Peter Mrazek is number 17, if that answers your question. On the Donato front, I'd be shocked if he isn't moved. I don't know exactly what they can get from him for him, but for a pending UFA making so little and how productive he's been, topping 20 goals now, I think he's the perfect middle six addition for any playoff team. And Peter Mrazek, they've quickly run out of space. You know, if Lauren Brossoit was healthy, the Hawks have 4 NHL quality goaltenders. Mrazek and Brossoit are not part of the future. It's going to be Spencer Knight and Arvid Soderblom. Can they find a way to flip Mrazek between now and Friday? They're certainly going to try. The 1 year remaining on his deal at $4.5 million. It is a little bit rich. And the other thing to consider is that the Hawks are now out of salary retention spots after the Jones deal. So they'd have to maybe find a third-party broker, and maybe that's enough to interest a team if you can get Mrazek at $2.75 million for next year as well. That's a pretty reliable goalie for that number. So I think they're going to try. No promises, though, but definitely in the mix.
Great stuff, Frank. Really appreciate your time this morning.
David, have a good week.
Frank Saravalli from the Daily Faceoff and CHSN. You can see him on Blackhawks Countdown Live on CHSN breaking things down, and he was great on Saturday night explaining the Seth Jones trade to the Florida Panthers.